Of all the teams in the National Football League, the Green Bay Packers enjoy some of the most passionate fans in the country. Year after year, the team easily tops the fan base list with sky-high TV ratings and a whopping 137,000 cheeseheads on the longest season ticket waiting list in the league. I'm Shereen Seewert from Brute 51 in Wausau.
And I'm Ezra Wall from Newsmakers in La Crosse. We also welcome the regular listeners of the West Side in Eau Claire and Simply Superior in Superior. Today we're taking a look at the people and their Packers, the unique connection the Green Bay Packers have with fans, one that goes well beyond the walls of Lambeau Field. Later in the program, we'll speak with Cliff Crystal, the team's historian, video journalist Keith Donovan, and fans like you who love their Green Bay Packers.
But let's start off the hour by talking with a Central Wisconsin native who had the ultimate Green Bay Packer fan experience. He not only played with the team, he wound up in the Packer Hall of Fame. Mark Tauscher was drafted by the Packers in the seventh round of the 2000 NFL Draft, was part of the team that beat the Pittsburgh Steelers to win Super Bowl 45, and spent his entire pro football career in Green Bay. He spent time as a Packers broadcaster, and he's currently part of the Wisconsin Badgers radio team and hosts the daily Wilde and Tausch radio show and podcast.
You grew up in Wisconsin. I mean, obviously, you're from Auburndale. You went to the UW. You're a favorite among Badgers fans and Packers fans alike. It seems like an obvious question, but did you grow up a Packers fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can remember we grew up on a dairy farm right in Millador, Wisconsin, which is up in Wood County. And, you know, we would obviously have chores to do and stuff, but it was always, we would find time either to listen to it on the radio with Max McGee and Jim Irwin. You know, unfortunately, most of my childhood, the Packers weren't very good, but I loved it. And we would, you know, we'd go back and after the game, we'd get done with our chores and the Schmitz, which are our neighbors, had a bunch of kids. We'd always get together and play the game, whether it was Lynn Dickey or Donnie Mikowski or Randy Wright, whoever was quarterbacking, you know, we'd go and try to emulate that, James Lofton. And so our Sundays, we would try to carve out and say, we want to either watch or listen to whatever the Packers are doing. And you know, typically our mood would be better depending on, you know, whether or not Green Bay found a way to win.
So you said you were in the backyard emulating Lynn Dickey and Don Mikowski and all those guys. Obviously, you played football on the college level before going to the NFL. When did you start to recognize that you had some skills?
You know what? It's a funny story, but I went through and I got down to Wisconsin by playing basketball at Auburndale. Our team made the state championship, and then, you know, one of the guys came to recruit me. I was going to go play football at UW Stevens Point. And, you know, had that happened, who knows? But I did not have pro aspirations. That was never even thought about. And until really my fifth year at Wisconsin, I had been a backup. I backed up, our current athletic director, Chris McIntosh. And I just was going to get my degree from a great university and move on. And when I finally got my opportunity to go play, some scouts came in, and I remember it was early afternoon in October of probably 1999, which was my fifth year. My offensive line coach, Jim Huber, just came to me and said, hey, just want to let you know there's some NFL scouts looking at you, and I think you can do it. I think you should give it a shot. And that was really the first time on my radar that, hey, this might be an opportunity for me to have a career in, you know, to play in the NFL, which, you know, we all dreamt about that when we're throwing the ball in the backyard. But the reality is that wasn't, you know, I didn't think there was much of a chance of it. And then all of a sudden that day, early in that season, my senior year, that came in, and I just wanted to make sure I was going to do everything I could to try and fulfill that dream that I didn't even realize was a potential opportunity for me.
Scouts are looking at you. You know, draft day is approaching, and it looks like your number could get called, and then it does, and it's the hometown team who's coming knocking on your door. Talk about that.
Yeah, it was the whole process is crazy. You know, where you finish up. We're fortunate. You know, Ron Dayne wins the Heisman. We go out and we win a Rose Bowl, and from then it was just, I got invited to the Shrine Bowl. I got invited to go over to Hawaii and play in the Hula Bowl. Then you have the combine, and you go through your workouts, and you don't really know what's going to happen. And, you know, for me, it was, I just wanted to get drafted. I would obviously love the Green Bay Packers. Never thought about that. It was what, try to get drafted as soon as you can. And I thought I was going to be drafted by the Detroit Lions. One of their coaches called me on this back then, the draft was Saturday, Sunday. And I had a call early on Sunday morning that the fifth round I was going to get picked by the Lions. And fortunately, now I was not. And the sixth round, I'm not hearing anything. I'm starting to kind of freak out a little bit. And then, you know, luckily the Packers called me with one of their picks in the seventh round and said, we're going to select you. And at that point, I was, let's go. 2 days later, I'm driving up to minicamp where I'm seeing Farvin, Frank Winters, and, you know, a bunch of guys that I had been sitting here watching win a Super Bowl 4 or 5 years earlier. And here I am now in that locker room. It was really a crazy, you know, stretch of time for me.
I mean, in a way, talk about the ultimate fan experience, that had to be it. And yet you've got to buckle down and get a job to do. What's it like to make that transition from kind of fanboying on these guys to all of a sudden, you know, you're part of that line that's like protecting Brett Favre from, you know, what could be looming disaster?
Yeah, the reality hits you pretty quick. I think you walk in and you're kind of, you know, I remember kind of a deer in the headlights first time I meet Frankie, and then obviously you meet Brett Favre, who's at that point, I think, a 2 or 3 time MVP. And you got a little fanboyish to you. And then all of a sudden you're out there, you're trying to block Bonnie Holiday and Santana Dotson. And, you know, the focus goes quick, like, all right, this is awesome to I better get my stuff together. This is going to be a really short trip.
You know, this is true across the country and across the world, but especially fans here in Wisconsin. And that's primarily what we're talking about today, is that fan relationship between the people and their Packers. That can get pretty intense. You're talking about people who paint their houses and their cars and get tattoos and all that kind of stuff. What's it like as a player? How much of that sort of fan intensity are players aware of in that locker room?
Oh, you're aware of it. And I think, you know, being the smallest NFL town, I think you realize it's all about football, and the guys that aren't from the state of Wisconsin understand it quickly. It's the only team that is owned by the fans. So you embrace that part of it. And I think, you know, the idea that thousands of people would come to watch practice, kind of mind blowing, because, you know, you practice at Camp Randall, and that was never the case. It amazes you at first, and then it just becomes normal that, hey, people really care, because I think it really does come back to it's their football team too. And people really look at it and say they're invested literally and figuratively in the outcomes and how this team does. And I think people look at that as being pretty cool.
You hit the nail on the head there when you talk about people being invested, because they literally spend hundreds of dollars of their own money to buy a piece of stock that is of absolutely no financial value.
And you know what? And it's not even, I think initially you think, why would you do that? And then once you see it and you're like, well, why wouldn't you do it? I think from a spiritual and just from a emotional standpoint, I think it's a great move, because people are all in and they really are interested in what is, you know, what this football team does. And that's why you don't see people jumping on and off bandwagons as much, because people are invested.
So we're talking all about the fan experience today, the Green Bay Packer fan experience especially. What has that interaction been like for you? Can you think of an example of something that really impacted you or was kind of out there crazy, or some experience with a fan interaction?
Yeah, I mean, I can remember my first game. I didn't know where to park. And I just remember trying to figure out, all right, I don't know. We were at St. Norbert's in the dorms, and it was a preseason game. And I'm trying to maneuver into the parking lot because I, you know, didn't pay attention when they gave us the passes where we go. So I ended up parking in the far end. And I remember Packer fans kind of helping me figure out how to get from point A to point B so I could go play. They recognized me. And, you know, it's always cool now going back. I don't see a ton of 65 jerseys with Tauscher on the back of them, but whenever I do, I want to make sure I stop and say thank you and hello. And coolest part is, and I think people from out of state will always tell you, you come to a game and you park your car in somebody's lawn, you're going to get offered a beer, you're going to get offered to use the bathroom, you're going to get offered a brat. And I think that's still, I think to me, everything about Wisconsin sports fans, we want to go out compete and win, but we want to have a great time while we're doing it. And the fact that it's, whether it's Philadelphia fans or Giants fans, whoever it is, we want everybody to have a good time, but we want to win. And we want to do it with you having a good time.
Mark Tauscher is a former Wisconsin Badger, a former Green Bay Packer, the pride of Auburndale, and of course, a talk show host and sports commentator in his own right. Mark, thank you so much for your time today, and thanks for being on our show.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
That was Green Bay Packer Hall of Famer Mark Tauscher on making his childhood dream come true at none other than Lambeau Field.
And now we'll hear from Annie Knowlton, a fan from across the border in Minnesota.
Annie, thanks for being here, but I've got to know, when did you start loving the Packers?
So actually, my mom's side of the family is from Wisconsin, and my dad's side is from Minnesota. And so as I was growing up and choosing teams, I chose the Twins and the Packers.
So kind of right down the middle.
Kind of right down the middle. I mean, what was happening in the early 90s was the Twins were winning stuff. They won the World Series in 91, and then Brett Favre came along for the Packers. So to be frank with you, it was more of a, ooh, this is very exciting.
I understand that you connect with Packer fans all over the place through social media. Talk about that a little bit.
So back in 2011, 2012, I was very interested in the Packers, and I happened upon this website called Cheesehead TV, and I started listening to some of their fun stuff, and there was people interacting on the website, and they had their Twitter handles, and I'm like, well, I'm on Twitter.
So the Packer fans that you've connected with on social media, on Twitter, have you ever met them?
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about that.
When we started really forming this group in 2011 and 2012, we started to meet up every year in Green Bay for something called Throwback Weekend, because every time we went and met up, it happened to be the weekend they were wearing the throwback jerseys. And it turned it, the first one we did had about 150 people.
Wow, really?
From all over the place. And then the next couple we did had people from Canada, people from the UK. It had people from all over the country would come, and we had 200-300 people for a few years there. It kind of hit its arc, and we still, though, a lot of us would still gather informally annually to just hang out. Last time we did, of course, was 2019, and celebrated the life of a friend, a very dear friend of ours from our Twitter family who passed away. So.
How did that experience of being, having that team, that sports thing in common help you guys through that grieving process? Because it seems like sports would be like a really, I mean, it's fun and everything, but when it comes to something like that, it can really bring people together.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, before that, we had already been very close. I mean, many of us who got together, I was in one of their wedding at Lambeau Field. This dear friend of ours, we all gathered there. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, us all being very close like that really made it so that it felt like truly a celebration of life with people who really, really knew her. I mean, we really all interacted a lot. We were true friends. I did want to add real quick, one thing about my Packer family that I love is that back in 2013, I had a relapse of cancer, and they actually all came together, and not only did they buy me like a spa day and send it to me, but also they got me a ticket to the Giants-Packers playoff game in January, and I was able to go to that as well. So just wanted to toss out the fact that they're extremely generous as well and excellent, excellent friends.
Another example of, I mean, you were able to be together when the friend of yours passed away, and then you're able to kind of help each other through difficult life circumstances like that.
Absolutely.
Tell me what it is about the Packers that is so special to you, and, well, frankly, what makes it them so superior to the Vikings, for example, besides the record.
I love the community feeling of the Packers. Going to Green Bay and having like a square mile of tailgating, you can walk around. Everybody would give you a hot dog if you asked for it. Everybody just is like a sea of humanity of everybody who has this thing in common. And obviously that's the case with most football teams, but it feels really special with the Packers because of the fact that it is community owned. Essentially, it's a community team and the only one in the NFL. And because it's such a small market team, you really feel that small market community coming together to cheer on this team.
Do you have any Green Bay Packer tattoos?
I do.
Do you really?
I do. I have one on my hip. I got it when I was 18 years old in downtown Minneapolis.
Are there any you can show on the radio?
No. Sure can't. Well, I can show anything on the radio.
That's true.
I just, you know, wouldn't want to show it to you now. But yeah, no, it's on my right hip.
Okay, that's fantastic.
Well, we're certainly glad that you're in good health, and congratulations on your recent wedding. That's awesome, and thank you for joining us.
Of course, thank you so much.
That was Minnesota-based Packer backer Annie Knowlton. You're listening to The People and Their Packers, a look at the Green Bay Packers and the team's deep roots in our local communities. Later in the program, we'll be joined by team historian Cliff Crystal, as well as Keith Donovan, who grew up a Packer fan in Rhinelander and later went on to cover the team for more than a decade as a videographer.
But in our next segment, we'll be joined by fans from La Crosse, a couple from Iowa who now own a Packer bar, and a Los Angeles native who moved to Green Bay and is president of a 12,000-member Southern California-based Packer fan club. I'm Shereen Seward in Wausau.
And I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. You're listening to The People and Their Packers on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Tell all the people across the USA, I love my Green Bay Packers.
We're back on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall from Newsmakers in La Crosse, and you're listening to The People and Their Packers, an up-close look at the smallest market team in the NFL, the Green Bay Packers, and their enormous popularity that stretches well beyond Wisconsin's borders.
From Route 51 in Wausau, I'm Shereen Seward, extending once again a warm welcome to our listeners in La Crosse, along with regular listeners of the West Side in Eau Claire and Simply Superior in Superior. Plus Packer fans erupted in cheers at Glory Days Sports Pub in La Crosse after the Packers' first touchdown against the Detroit Lions in their home opener. One of those fans is Lisa Malmo of La Crosse. She talks about adopting her Packer fandom as an adult.
How long have you been a Packers fan?
Oh my gosh. I would say since 1987. When I met my husband.
Since 87 when you met your husband, so he converted you.
Yes, he did. I was not into sports before that.
So you've been here to Glory Days before.
Oh my gosh, yes. Last year, it's like the best hangout in La Crosse for Packer fans.
What made it so cool?
I think it was the camaraderie with the crowd and how everybody just got so excited. And the guy that owned the bar, the music that he played, and the way that he just kind of roused us all up. Yeah, it was really cool.
And of course, you heard that that he had sold it and that it would close, or it was even closed for a while. Were you worried it wouldn't reopen?
Yeah, that was really sad. When I saw the thanks for the memories sign out there, closed, owner leaving, it was like, man, is that bar going to ever open again? So yeah, really happy to see sold sign and they were going to be open tonight.
As a Packer fan since the 80s, have you been in other Packer bars, or where else have you watched games?
I have been other Packer bars. I have actually been in the Packer locker room. My youngest son got to try on Donald Driver's jersey when Donald was playing for the Packers. Been to Packer bars in D.C., a park called Hamilton's, Packer bars in Green Bay. Yeah, big Packer fan.
That's fantastic. So in the locker room, what was that like?
Oh, that was awesome. It was awesome. We actually had gone to training camp, and my son knew the players, and he actually knew the people that worked there, and he recognized Red Batty, who was like the equipment manager, and he asked for Red's autograph. So then Red said, hey, what are you guys going to do? You know, after the training. And so we said, nothing. And he's like, meet us at this gate. And he took us around and took us into the locker room. And he let John hold up Donald Driver's, you know, jersey and try it on. It was just, and we walked out onto the field through the tunnel. It was just amazing. Yeah.
I've been on the Lambeau Field tour. They don't just let anybody do that.
Yeah, and this was before they even did the tour, so it was really awesome then. I mean, it was like going to Mecca, I guess. I don't know how to describe it. It was awesome. It was really awesome.
That's Lisa Melmo of La Crosse. Blake and Amanda Show of Lansing, Iowa, are the new owners of Glory Days. They bought the bar from the original owner, Mark Schneider, weeks ago. Lisa says they've been visiting the local spot for years.
So we take a trip every year with our college friends up to Oktoberfest. And that has just turned out to be the very first bar that we always go to. And it kind of just stuck with us.
When you heard that Mark hadn't been able to find a buyer and that the bar would, seems like the bar would close, and it did in fact close for a while, what did that feel like?
Actually, it happened last Oktoberfest. Walked across the, you know, Castery Bridge coming over from Pettibone, where we docked the boat at, and went to make our usual stop there, and we see the for sale sign on the outside. We're like, oh no, what are we gonna do? And, you know, a couple of adult cocktails later, we're like, we should just buy this place. You know, the group of friends should go in and buy this place. Amanda and I are fortunate enough, you know, being close here, that after we got talking about it, that we thought, you know, that's probably not a bad idea. Wisconsin's full of, and La Crosse is full of Packer fans. And we just love the atmosphere in there and the memorabilia and the people that you meet and fans. So we decided to do investigate it, see if it was something we could do, and things just evolved, and here we are. We were able to get it done before Oktoberfest and right at the beginning of the football season, so we're excited to see what happens.
Now, some fans paint the shed green and yellow. You guys bought a green and yellow bar. That's I mean, that has to put you in the upper echelon of Packer fandom. Was that the goal?
I think it's almost a little bit of jealousy that Mark had so much stuff that he had to move his man cave into an actual running bar, you know, and since I don't have that type of room at home to buy that much memorabilia, I think this is the next best thing.
Well, Blake Show and Amanda Show, congratulations on being the new owners of Glory Days, carrying on the tradition there. Here's to your success, and thanks for joining us on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you, Ezra.
Thank you.
The popularity of the Green Bay Packers extends far beyond Wisconsin's borders. After the team's home opener, we spoke with Dave Lucero. He's a Packers shareholder, season ticket holder, and president of the SoCal Packer Backers. Dave lives in Green Bay now, but growing up in Southern California, he wasn't always a fan.
I can't say that I was, to be honest with you. I didn't grow up the traditional cheesehead way. I was a fan of the Raiders. I'm a big Southern California sports guy, so the local teams, which was at the time the Dodgers, of course, the Lakers. I was a big fan of the Raiders, but I was growing up as a kid rooting on the Raiders. But in the summer of 1994, the Raiders and the Los Angeles Rams at the time both picked up that summer and left. And so, as a kid with no football team to root for, I was a little bit jaded about that whole experience, thinking that an NFL franchise could just get up and leave. So that next fall, I tuned in to watch football like ordinarily would, without a single team in mind, just watching football every Sunday. But I noticed that I gravitated to Brett Favre and the way he played with the Packers and the way he approached the game and the fun and the energy and the excitement he brought to the game. And I was hooked.
You talked about feeling like your team could just get up and leave and abandon you almost in that sense.
Yeah.
What was it like to know that you finally found a team, the only team in the NFL that literally can't do that?
Right. Literally. Coincidentally, not only am I a fan, I'm a shareholder. And this year I got my season tickets. I'm very fortunate about that. So I experienced my first game last night in my new seat. So I'm excited about that. But just the whole point of rooting and being a fan of anything in life, I feel like there's that loyalty and that bond that comes with rooting for a team that you're passionate about. And if a team can pick up and leave its fan base, I just told me that, you know, maybe it was time to look elsewhere. And the second I watched, you know, the Packers play and did a little bit of research about the history and about, you know, the community. And I was just hooked. And like I said, I've been a fan ever since. And And they'll break your heart, don't get me wrong, but they'll never leave you. So that's really important.
I'm really interested in this group, the Packer backers in California, 12,000 people. What is it about the Packers that touches people from as far away as Southern California?
Sure. I think that I could just speak from my own experience, but I think it holds true. We didn't have football in Southern California for 25 years from the time that the Rams and Raiders left until, you know, eventually the Rams coming back and the Chargers coming to the area. I think a lot of people are hungry for football and are passionate about football in the area. And with no professional team, it's easy to see a team like the Packers were successful, maybe not winning the championship every year, but successful, a competitive team, puts a great product on the floor. And when you have iconic quarterbacks like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, it's easy to root for them. So just being out West, I knew there was a tremendous fan base. What inspired me was the fact that whenever we would go to games, to Packer games, especially as visitors, we would be astonished by the number of California residents that were there cheering on the team and, you know, making conversation with fans. Finding out they were from Southern California, I thought, you know what, I need to bring people together.
You're a season ticket holder in Green Bay, along with being a shareholder. But I'm jealous of your status as a season ticket holder. And B, how long did you have to wait on that waiting list?
Fortunately for me, I put my name on both lists. For the bowl, of course, I'm like number 80,000 out of 144,000. So the odds of me ever getting those is probably slim to none. But I put in for the Premier Club seats. And so I've been waiting 14 years for those tickets. And obviously my name was drawn and I was super ecstatic about that, just to be able to know that I have my own seats week after week. And I'm very fortunate to have great friends and from Wisconsin that have been helping me. I haven't missed a home game since 2010.
14 years. Was it worth the wait?
Of course. Walking through last night, I will say this about being a Premier Club seat holder. It's a little bit different environment. You think of going to a stadium and, you know, having stadium food and beer. You're thinking of brats and you're thinking of nachos and fries and that sort of thing. I think last night, my wife and I had a steak sandwich. She had a chicken teriyaki noodle bowl. And we had red velvet cake and we had ice cream at halftime. So it was just a completely different environment. But it was completely awesome having to be able to experience that's pretty unique.
Are you a big tailgater?
We are. I am, yes.
What's game day fare at a SoCal Packer Backers tailgate party?
Well, for the first time in a number of years, we had a host yesterday, which was an awesome experience. Shout out to Brittany. She took care of my group as we tailgated yesterday. But normally, you know, just because we're in Wisconsin, depending on the visitors, I kind of do the typical California thing. We do drink Spotted Cow, but we don't traditionally do that. Since friends are coming, I'll have Mexican beers. I do have a lot of Corona in the cooler, ready for our guests to drink those. And then coincidentally, I will put Heineken in a different cooler, and I know the two are different, but I like the green and gold. And we also do tacos. I'll make carne asada. We'll marinate it the night before, and we'll make tacos for everyone participating or coming to the house. They can also take that carne asada and make nachos out of it, make burritos out of it. We make homemade salsa, just the full Mexican food, but we tend to turn it into a tailgate party, but with Mexican food.
I love that you color code the beer coolers.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Weird when I said Corona, but then I have to be honest, yes, we do occasionally do Stella, but mostly it's usually Corona and Heineken.
I was expecting like, oh, we do brats and sauerkraut. No, man, yeah. Carne asada, green and gold beer.
Awesome.
Oh, man.
There's so many options when you do the carne asada. Like I said, you could do the burritos, the nachos, and the tacos. And the best part about it is it's even better after beer and after the game. It's even better when you warm it up because, you know, after drinking during the game, you need a little bit of pick-me-up. So it's good to go.
Well, plus it's always better after the Packers win, right?
Of course, everything's better after a Packers win. So
what do you do in the neighborhood to let your Packer flag fly?
Well, my friends are my neighbors. They're amazing people, but I'm pretty low-key because I'm about 7 minutes away. But if you walk into my basement, it is just a – it's the area where I feel at most at peace with my memorabilia and pictures of my friends from all the games since 2009 that I've attended. And that, to me, those relationships, those connections, those pictures are far more important to me than any memorabilia. So that's really where my friends and my neighbors know me, is from wanting to visit my downstairs, my man cave, and seeing all of the Packer stuff. It kind of, reminds them of being at Lambeau Field.
Do you have a favorite piece of memorabilia?
You know, I was fortunate enough about 5 years now, where Aaron Rodgers was signing the Salvation, for the Salvation Red Kettlebell program, where to make donations. I was fortunate to be one of the first 100, 125 fans waiting in line. And Aaron signed a jersey for me. He turned it over. On the backside where it said Rogers, which is traditionally where he signs. But I said, hey, Aaron, if you don't mind, can you turn it back over and sign the front for me? Which he was gracious enough to do. And when he did turn it over, he saw our club patch and was really asked a lot of questions about it, was really, really inspired by it. And we had a conversation, and I told him I'm a president of the club back in Southern California, and he thought that was really incredible. So that's my favorite piece of memorabilia hanging on my walls, my frame Rogers jersey that he signed with my patch on it.
Dave Lucero is a resident of Green Bay, but before that, a resident of Southern California, and one of the leaders and organizers behind the SoCal Packer Backers, and we're pleased to have had him on the show today. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you guys for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Next, team historian Cliff Crystal joins us, followed by Keith Donovan, a Rhinelander native who talks about his experience as a fan lucky enough to cover his home team from the sidelines as a video journalist, right alongside players, coaches, and fans.
From Newsmakers in La Crosse, I'm Ezra Wall.
And from Route 51 in Wausau, I'm Shireen Seward. You're listening to The People and Their Packers on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yeah, you know what it is. I'm a cheesehead, got cheese whiz. Pittsburgh Steelers, that's nothing. That Super Bowl ring, that's nothing. Pull up in your town when you see me, you know everything. Green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow.
Green and gold upon their chest. These are men, the NFL's best. Lombardi's prize, they will bring back the loyal troops of the Green Bay Pack.
We're back on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall from Newsmakers in La Crosse. You're listening to The People and Their Packers, a look at the Green Bay Packers tradition that's been part of our communities for decades.
I'm Shireen Seward from Route 51 in Wausau. The Packers have perhaps the most storied history in all of the NFL, which only adds to the legend of Lambeau Field. Here's what team historian Cliff Crystal had to say.
One of the things that I learned in my research that I really wasn't aware of was the Packers were not unlike the other small town teams in the league that folded. There really were not enough people in Green Bay to support the team. So Packers struggled with attendance for several years, even into the early 1950s. In the 1920s, they didn't always outdraw the East-West high school football rivalry, which was really Press Gazette would refer to as the biggest game of the year in Green Bay. But when they started winning in New York, when they went there in 1929, they played the Giants in a late November showdown. Both teams were unbeaten. Packers, I believe, were 9-0. The Giants 8-0-1. And the Packers beat the Giants and went on to win their first NFL title. In the process, they captured the fancy of the fans in New York. And what saved the franchise really was, over the next several years, when NFL games are being attended by roughly 12,000 people, most games, in fact, drew less than that, the Packers were drawing more than 30,000 in New York and Chicago.
So in your years covering the team as a journalist and now as the team's historian, what have you seen in terms of interactions between the fans and the players? Is there a moment that stands out to you?
I think what's interesting is the number of fans who come from out of town to attend the games. I'm not sure exactly what percentage of fans from Green Bay are actually in the stadium on a Sunday afternoon, but I would not be surprised if the number is less than 50%. I mean, Lambeau Field is a pilgrimage.
So there's a lot more than just the game itself going on in Green Bay. People can come, as you mentioned, Cliff, and see training camp. They can come and visit the stadium. You can take tours of the stadium even in the off season, and there's the Packer Hall of Fame that's there as well, with all kinds of different displays and artifacts about the team's history. What's it like to watch people encounter these things, these objects that are directly connected to all of the stories that they've heard of these amazing figures all their lives?
You know, that was Bob Harlan's intent when he pushed to have taxpayers support the renovation of the stadium in the early 2000s, was to make Lambeau Field a 365-day-a-year destination. And that's what's happened. And it's certainly helped that the Packers have been a winning team throughout that time frame. But this team has so much history, and that's why we're calling our book The Greatest Story in Sports. So the Hall of Fame is a big lure. My wife and I and a good friend, Scott King, started what's called the Packers Heritage Trail. We put up plaques as well as a large public plaza in downtown Green Bay. So there's a lot of history, too, here, the Packers Heritage Trail being an example. The Hall of Fame being an example. It gives people something to do when they come here besides just attending a game or a training camp practice.
Cliff Crystal is the Packers team historian and the author of the forthcoming book, The Greatest Story in Sports, which is hopefully going to be available coming up here around the holiday season. Cliff, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And now we're joined by Keith Donovan. Keith grew up in Rhinelander, graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, and went on to a career in video journalism, one that took him to the sidelines, covering his favorite team both home and away.
Growing up in Rhinelander, I mean, we were not the wealthiest family in the world. I never even got to go to a Packer game. So the first time I ever went to a Packer game, I was covering it. So I got to walk down the ramp and be right there on the field. And I mean, it was just tingling. It was the coolest thing.
You and I have talked about this, that you got to take your dad with you to a game as well.
Funny thing is you'd think that there'd be other people that would want to take their Saturday and go to the game with, or Sunday, excuse me, and go to the game with me. But I couldn't get anyone else that was willing to do that, because, you know, you're in the locker room and you're doing interviews and you had to have somebody hold the mic for you and stuff. And it was hard for me to get somebody on a regular basis to do that. So I actually asked my father if he'd want to go do that with me. And I mean, it was awesome for him. Like I said, growing up for us, vacationing was camping, you know. So for us to go to the Packers game together, he could be on the sidelines with me and then we'd be in the locker room and he'd get to see all these players up front and personal. And it was great. And, you know, like being in the break room on Monday, the guys would all be just, you know, goofing around talking about the game, and, you know, somebody would go, did you see that play? I mean, what was Favre thinking? And my dad could kind of joke around and go, well, you know, when I asked him on Sunday, he'd say, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, he never really got to ask them, but he could at least, you know, put, you know, taunt that he was at the game and they weren't. So it was kind of cool.
What was the biggest football experience that you had before that? Was it like local high school or had you been to college games?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest experience for me, you know, growing up as a Hodeg, probably the biggest game was the Bell game between Antigo. You know, that was pretty big. And then I went to University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, and the student television station there would cover the game. So I'd help them set up the coverage every day. And, you know, but football wasn't that big there. But other than that, I mean, just being on the couch like everybody else, screaming at the television.
You've been to the stadium as a pro. You've been there on game day working. Have you been to Lambeau as a fan? And what's the difference there?
Only after I stopped covering the games. I switched out of being a photographer. And I'm still in the television industry, but I switched to a different career path. After I stopped covering, then I was able to go as a fan. And it is a lot different. First off, I know what the score of the game is because you're actually rooting and you're cheering and you're looking at stuff. I honestly would never know what the score of the game was because I was always concentrating on what I was trying to do, whether it was covering the action or if I'm doing, I have a list of ISOs. We call them ISO shots because if you know, the sports guys or people have to do a news story. They figure out four or five players during the week and they want video of these players. So you're just isolating on them, whether they have the ball or not. Half the time, I had no idea what the score was. So it was fun to just sit back and relax and watch it. However, it's a lot tamer. I'll be honest with you. It's a lot different, especially at home.
So when you're on the field as a videographer, as a photojournalist, do you have to kind of watch out for flying objects?
You're not that far removed from the sidelines. And there was actually one time, I'm not sure who it was, but I was doing what I had said. I was doing some ISOs and I was following a person, and you can almost kind of tell when they're not going to get the ball because, you know, they start off really fast and then you can kind of tell they just let up a little bit because they don't want to use up all their juice for the game, you know, stuff. And I could tell it was not coming my way, but then all of a sudden somebody, I don't know if it was a officer or somebody else behind me, because we have to kneel at Lambeau, and somebody grabbed me by the back of the neck or collar and just kind of pulled me down backwards. And at first I was so angry. I was like, what are you doing? And then I saw the cleats fly over me ahead, over the top of me. And, you know, the play was coming my way and you hold the camera on your right side. And so my right side was my blind side and I couldn't see the play coming my way. And if they hadn't done that, you know, who knows, I would have been, you know,
cleats to the head.
Yeah. I would have been embedded into the turf, basically.
You got to cover the Super Bowl back when the Packers were playing in New Orleans. Tell us about that.
Yep, New Orleans and the following year in San Diego. So a win and a loss. It was amazing. It was so at the time I worked for a local Fox affiliate. It was the first ever Super Bowl on Fox, and I was there for 2 weeks down in New Orleans. And again, it's normally a 3 day city. You know, you go there for 3 days and it's fun, but I was there for 2 weeks. And then being on the sidelines, it's very aggressive actually for photographers. I mean, photographers are vying for position. You have to run ahead. You can't like hold a spot or anything like that. You have to run ahead and you have to have some intuition too. You have to kind of know or think, you know, where the play is going to be. Also you're looking at the clock and you see that there's only maybe 10 seconds left in the quarter and there's maybe, you know, 15 or 20 seconds left on the play clock. You know they're not going to get a playoff and they're down on the 10-yard line, so you have to literally do a 100-yard sprint, you know, to get to the other end of the stadium because they're going to switch sides and you're going to be stuck on the opposite end of the field. So you literally sprint to the other end. And not just at a Super Bowl, when the Packers were really popular, there was just as many people on the sidelines as there were a Super Bowl. And you have to get there and you got to get your spot. And a lot of competition for that. People are bumping you and pushing you around and stuff.
What's it like in the locker room after a Packer win?
I mean, after a Packer win, they're all happy and fun. And a lot of times you can get people to talk. I mean, obviously the quarterback, I mean, I can't honestly remember ever seeing Brett in the locker room, because they always bring them out and they have them on the podium. And I don't even know if, to this day, I don't even know if their area is in the main area, because I would never see them in there. But they're goofing around and they're having a good time and laughing. The tough part was on a loss, because we still had to go in there and we still had to talk to them. And, you know, we had to do our job, and they don't want to hear you ask those tough questions. They don't want to have to do it, but we still have to do it. And sometimes that was really tough. And it was really tough when they lost to Denver in the Super Bowl. I mean, great, it was all fun when they won in New Orleans, but the following year when they lost to Denver, and that was at the time, it was considered one of the best Super Bowls. Most Super Bowls are blowouts and it's not a great game, but that one was considered a really good game. And you could hear a pin drop in that locker room. And most people didn't even want to talk to him, didn't want to ask questions. That was a tough day.
We talked to people for this program from all over the place who are Packer fans. I mean, there are 12,000 Packer fans in a Southern California group that get together and watch games and connect with one another. After covering the Packers for so many years, what do you think it is about the team that has appeal that reaches so far beyond Wisconsin's borders?
Maybe part of it is that, while, you know, any team in the NFL is big business. The Packers are the only team that is not owned by, you know, like a one person or a certain entity. It's owned by the people. And it's in a very small, small town. And I think people feel like it's our team. You know, it's not one person's team. And everybody just feels like they're part of something. And I think there's a lot to that, especially like if it's a close game or something like that. It's not the Packers won. I mean, we all won. I don't know if we have time to talk about it, but there's one game for me that sticks out more so than any Super Bowl or anything like that. And I think Shireen and I had shared a video of this that I had shot before, but this was a Vikings Packers regular season game. It was November 6, 2000, and it was November. It was cooler, super windy, raining, it was raining sideways. And it looked like the Vikings were going to win. I mean, there's like 8 seconds left in the game and it was tied and they're about to kick a field goal from somewhere in the 30-yard line. But the snap was bobbled and the holder decided to try to do some sort of a pass and was intercepted and the game ended in a tie. Packers won the toss. And so obviously, you know, sudden death rules back then, we're heading down. And Favre on third down, he threw a pass to Antonio Freeman. And the pass was deflected. And Freeman did a face plant. He slid on the ground. And everybody thought this play is over. The ball lands on Antonio's back. And somehow he spins around and grabs the ball before it hits the ground. And it's considered a catch. But everybody, the stadium, the announcers, even me, and it happened literally right in front of me. Everybody thought it was a dead play, but it was a reception. And because there wasn't a Viking near him, he actually got up and he ran the distance into the end zone and sudden death, we won. And I mean, the fans went crazy. I mean, there's enough electricity in that stadium to power half of Wisconsin. I mean, it was just amazing. You know, at the end of the game, you get to run onto the field with your camera and stuff. And I was just going from player to player and running up there and just to see the excitement and the electricity in the air. I mean, it was something that I will never, ever experience again in my life.
You've talked about shooting the players, shooting the field action. What about the fans? You ever turn the camera around on the fans, or do you ever get an opportunity to see interaction between the players and the fans?
You do a little bit, and that's kind of the fun part. You don't always get to do that. There's a few occasions you get to do that. But there's one thing that stands out for me, and it happens every year, and honestly, anybody can take part in this. You don't have to have a ticket to a game to take part in this, and that's training camp. Every year, the Packers, they get ready at the stadium, and then they walk across the parking lot to the Don Hutson Center, and they have practice over there. And they have it set up where people can stand there and kind of watch the players come out and stuff. And this is so stinking cute. There's these kids with their little bikes that kind of come over there, and these players, the kids will stand there, and, you know, these players are towering, big, huge linemen and stuff that weigh hundreds and hundreds of pounds. And there's these little tykes with their bikes, and they're almost looking straight up at the sky at these guys, and they hand them their bikes. And these big guys will hop on these bikes, and their knees are as they're trying to ride the bike are practically hitting them in the chin. And the kid will like hop alongside of them, and they'll ride that bike across the parking lot all the way over to practice. And then they hand the bike over to the kid. And it's just one of the greatest things you can possibly witness. And again, it's free. It happens almost every day during training camp. If anyone has nothing going on, I encourage you to go up and check it out.
Photojournalist Keith Donovan has been in the television industry for years and spent many of them covering the Packers on the sidelines. Keith, thanks very much for joining us on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That's all we have time for today as we complete our behind-the-scenes look at the people and their Packers. I'm Shireen Seewert from Route 51 in Wausau.
And I'm Ezra Wall from Newsmakers in La Crosse. Thanks also to the listeners of The West Side and Simply Superior. Thanks to our guests, Mark Tauscher, Annie Knowlton, Lisa Malmo, Blake and Amanda Show, Cliff Crystal, and Keith Donovan.
Special thanks to the regional teams in Wausau, La Crosse, Eau Claire, and Superior for their help in producing today's program. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Special music today provided by Def Crew, The Music Vendors, Todd Rundgren, Lil Wayne, and Edward Lemberger. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.